At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have a very fun show for you today. Today, we do our bi-week roster evaluation. We do this once per year, and my co-host, as always, for this is Brian McFarland. Brian, how are you doing?
Good, good, Ken. How's your Saturday been so far?
Been great. Looking forward to some things tonight, and nothing more than this, though. This discussion, one of the most fun that I have every year with a guy who really knows Capology. If you've never run into his stuff, you probably run a cave, but certainly really understands the salary cap. Great Ravens fan, and this is always a very good discussion. So I'm going to start off for a little bit and fill people in on how we look at the roster in this way. This is a methodology I came up with probably close to 10 years ago now, in terms of splitting the roster into five different groups. Young producers, those are players on their rookie contracts who have the best value they provide relative to cap. And that's going to be the measure we're using all through this, is how much value are players offering relative to cap, and then how does that relate to some of the strategy we have. Brian, of course, will bring a lot to that discussion. Second category are developmental players. Those are players who aren't quite yet producing a lot relative to cap, but they're still on their rookie deals, which is an important thing, which means they could still move up and become young producers. That's number two. Category number three is veterans playing for market value. You spend a lot of your cap there. We'll talk through those. Most of them are among your highest value players, and they're some of the decisions you really have to make in terms of when you get rid of players a year early at the end of their contracts and try to harvest some cap value. The next one is veteran cap value concerns. So there are some players in that category, unfortunately, on the Ravens defense, which we're going to talk about first here, that we'll go through. You can probably guess who they are. The last category is transitional, and those are players who they have no obvious future with the team. They're here today, gone tomorrow kind of players that don't really have a huge impact on the cap in any way or another. But let's start it off with the young producer category. Brian, I always really appreciate having you on. By the way, let's talk a little bit about your work first. Brian, you do the cap work on RSR and you post your articles there, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm on Russell Street Report. Kind of a dead time right now, obviously, for salary cap stuff. And thankfully, it's been an up and down season. But if it was a down season, I'd be more articles and more talk about next year. So thankfully, as far as the cap goes, we're not really worried about that at this point. And then, of course, I'm on Twitter/X post things, obviously, breaking news and, those kinds of things as soon as we get some kind of information on a new deal or signing or cut or whatever trade, whatever it might be during the year. We fill in that information, get that out there as quickly as we can and put the numbers together.
He's at Ravens Salary Cap on Twitter. Probably because I've contacted him so many times over the years. At Ravens S almost always does it and immediately brings his name to the very top of the list. But appreciate you always making time for the show, Brian. I look forward to doing this every year with you. All right, let's jump in again with young producers here. There are six on the Ravens defense as I see it. And again, these are mine. Brian may scold me on a couple of these and move them around category-wise, and that's cool. Kyle Hamilton, Travis Jones, Adafa Yowe, Tavius Robinson, kind of a new addition maybe, Ardarius Washington, and Nate Wiggins. Maybe we talk about each of these individually, but who would you like to talk about first?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Tavius and Ardarius too, because I think they're probably the biggest surprises on the list. Ardarius finally being able to, we've kind of always had high hopes for him, but he's kind of been able to keep it together injury-wise, health-wise, and he's really put it together, and at least at this point, saved the safety group, to be honest with you. And then Tavius, I have a lot of I had high hopes from the beginning. I liked what we saw last year. Seems to be a pretty solid run defender. And then Ali's showing a little more juice in the rush game. So kind of reminds me of, an early, maybe not as much of a rusher, but maybe not Za'Darius Smith maybe as much. But in those first couple years, he was kind of getting his feet under him. Who was the rusher before? Who came back just a couple seasons ago?
Came back.
Oh, geez.
We're getting old here. I should remember this. So he would have been drafted around when? Like 2000?
Cornell McPhee.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A guy that could, they could slide him inside and out and move him around and was good against the run and developed as a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And so fingers crossed, that's what I'm hoping we'll see out of Tavius, obviously. Pass rush being something you can never have enough of. So,
all right, let me speak a little bit about those two guys and we'll move on here. Ardarius, first of all, you nailed it in terms of the health thing, because he's won multiple positions he wasn't supposed to ever win by his play on the field. He won the slot corner role last year, and he's about their fourth choice to do it based on the players. They started with Brandon Stevens. They tried other guys. People got hurt. People moved. Arthur Mallett ended up getting hurt. He'd been having a pretty good camp. But then Ardarius won the job in 2023, got injured in that second game, which is very disappointing, and didn't have much play after that. But he is definitely a high-quality nickel, where I think he still probably is a little better. This team doesn't really need his nickel play the same way. Were they to get another safety, I think that at this point they'd move Hamilton back up to nickel.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, that Swiss Army knife that he is, that, where is he on the field at this moment that the quarterback has to, worry about? I think that certainly Hamilton is that guy. And, because obviously he hasn't rushed the passer much this year like he did in past years, and, coming off the out of the slot and things like that. So, I think they'd like to get back to that. And, here we go again. Maybe this coming off season, we're searching for safeties again, as it seems to be the never, ever since Ed Reed, seems to be the never ending story.
Well, I think they probably draft one this year. And I hope this is one where this is my partner on Friday Morning GM Voss hates the notion of drafting a safety with an early round pick, because he thinks it's not the higher value category. But I think when you're talking a free safety, you can never have too many of those. That's the group you really need to groom and make sure that your guys can at least play the split field who play safety, because now for the next however many years they have him, they're going to have a guy who can play the big nickel role.
Yeah,
for as long as they want that. I the Ravens have been in that position in the past where they've had, I think our safeties are so versatile, but what they really mean is they have only strong safeties, and that's
right. That's not versatility now.
Real quick on Tavius Robinson, the one thing that's probably been the biggest about him recently has been a big increase in snap share, and the Ravens need that out of their outside linebacker group. They've been very, very short on players who can really eat snaps, particularly on early downs. And it gives you a little bit of that run defense, as you mentioned. I think that whatever they get him out of him as a pass rusher, at least on this contract or through this year anyway, is something that I think is gravy. And I hope he will grow, that much more as a pass rusher, but I'm not really expecting him to become Pernell McPhee at any point.
Pernell is
a really special player.
Yeah. Maybe being a little hopeful here.
There you go. All right, I'll pick a player to talk about next. I'm going to start with Nate Wiggins. I think seeing him get more playing time because of the changes that made in the secondary has been one of the really nice things about this year. He should play most of the snaps the remainder of the year. I guess the thing I'm a little surprised about, I want to get your opinion on, is do you think the Ravens might, if Brandon Stevens is taking even a little bit of a seat, and we've already seen Brandon Stevens move to the inside in dime packages, do you think that we might see more of a traveling system where Wiggins follows the number one opposing receiver and Huntley's left on an island number two, and then maybe Wiggins gets some help behind that?
Yeah, that'll be interesting, because I mean they haven't done much of that over the years, and we don't really know what Robbie saying, three quarters into Zach Orr's reign, so to speak, so we don't know if he feels that's the way he wants to do it or not, but that'll be interesting to watch for sure. I mean, he's obviously got the, you know, other than the small frame, he's certainly got the speed, the skill. He's got to keep his hands off receivers a little more than he does right now. But that kind of technique, I imagine, will come with time, too. So, but I mean, obviously, if he turns in to be that, which we would hope, the Chris McAllister type, you know, that top kind of cover corner, then yeah, I mean, you want one-on-one, you know, you want the best on the best. And especially as we've seen with Cincinnati, what their receivers can do to us, especially Chase, if we can get a guy that can truly keep him to 100 yards would be something. Just 100 would be fine.
All right, pick another player of your choice now.
Yeah, I mean, and well, Travis Jones, another ascending player, certainly, like what we've seen, and actually he's played pretty darn well considering he's been banged up on that ankle. We've seen him come in and out, but he's, you know, if they can get him fully healthy this bye week, obviously I think came great timing. Bye week probably comes a great time anytime, but if it's week four, you know, it's not, that's not such a big deal, but they definitely needed it, and hopefully they can get some of their banged up guys a little healthier. Jones would be one of those guys. Obviously presents something in the middle that they, you know, because he can, he, you know, Michael Pierce does a good job, but, you know, every once in a while we get a push out of him. But Jones gives us a little more of that interior push that I think, you know, matched up with Matt Ibike next to him, unless they put him out on the edge at times, obviously. But I think Jones is that guy, that ascending guy right now.
So definitely drives the Ravens pass rush from my point of view. It's not driven from the edges. It's driven from how Jones gets double teams set up in the middle, how he commands those. And that really frees up Matt Ibike to have one-on-one versus a lot of guards, which is a great deal for him as well. So you got three guys who can win one-on-ones. They don't always do it, but you know, having three opportunities at it is pretty good. And Jones, the big question for me now is, we've got a lot of priority guys coming out of year three. We'll talk about this on the offensive side. Tyler Linderbaum is a guy, because the fifth-year option is not the same kind of value that they may want to sign early. Isaiah Likely's over there. On this side of the ball, you have Travis Jones that you really need to consider. Which of their third-year players, I'm missing some of you. Adafi Owe is actually coming out of year four, but before this fifth-year option kicks in, might be a time where you'd want to extend
right.
Hamilton, yes, but Hamilton has a cheap fifth-year option, so they can wait a year, right, pick it up, and then re-sign him after 25. He's critically important. I mean, he's the most important of all five of these players. But I still say I think they can wait a year. It'd be interesting if they do it this year. That would be a.
Well, it's always if you wait a year longer, other safeties, and I'd have to look at the free agent market or other safeties up for big money deals, but right, the price always goes up. So there's something to be said for getting it done a year sooner, though. Next year's cap's going to be pretty tight. And we'll obviously get into it with Lamar probably later, but you know, whether this will be the off season this off season or next that they would extend Lamar again. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, and of course, obviously they might want to start sooner rather than later, because we saw how long it took the last time. Because by 2026, his cap number goes to $75 million, something like that, in that range. So I don't think it's going to reach that point, but we certainly don't want it to get there.
There you go. All right. So anyway, if you look at the Travis Jones specifically, what might be a reasonable expectation for a 3-year extension, maybe? So he'd still be with the Ravens for year four on the contract, same price. And then that's what the Ravens typically try and do, right? And then give him some signing bonus and then add 3 years on after that.
Yeah, that would kind of be the setup generally. Because that way, you know, obviously big signing bonuses, you can prorate them. Now the deal already has some void years in it anyway.
So Travis Jones deal does?
Oh, I'm sorry, not Travis Jones. I'm sorry. So yeah, they would probably, I mean, obviously most players are going shorter. Players are wanting shorter deals, which makes perfect sense from the player's perspective. Obviously that's changed over the years, the years of seeing that, other than quarterbacks, of course, but the years of seeing, Ed Reed sign for 7 years and Ray sign for 7 years and Ogden sign for 7 years, those kinds of deals are out the window. So, Jones, I mean, they get him sooner. I mean, I guess it's just a question of obviously how he views himself. If he views himself about to have the Matt Ibike year from last year, then you're going to be looking at $20 million a year. You know, if he is, if views himself or the team views him more as a, you know, a run stopper with a little push, so to speak, as opposed to, you know, Matabike getting the, what, 13 or 14 sacks last year. So then you're probably still looking at 12-ish. Mm-hmm. So not cheap, but I mean, that's, you know, that's the going rate these days.
Okay. So 3 for 40, let's say,
yeah,
would seem like a reasonable number to add for the 26 through 28 season. So you'd be a Raven through 28 for another $40 million, and they'd have some ability to spread that out a little bit with signing bonuses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And we passed off our Darius Washington. He's actually another one. He's coming to the end of year three with a winding road of missing a year of service time and whatnot, that he could be another one that could get re-signed early.
Could be. Yeah. And he would be a guy that we've certainly seen them, you know, come up with those lesser guys, quote unquote. They did it with Geno Stone. They did it with Clark. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, older brain. Yeah. They did that. The Clark, I remember the Clark deal coming out of nowhere. So that's certainly something they could look into. He will be a restricted free agent next year, so he won't be as cheap, but he won't be terribly expensive for one more year. And that's probably going to be the first restricted free agent tender they've used in a while, because the last couple of years they've, because we talked about it before, but how a lot of players got their 1 year of service in the COVID to two COVID years in 2020 and 2021. Usually it takes 6 games to move forward a year in towards free agency. But in those COVID years, it was one. And some of those guys, especially that the Pittsburgh was a Pittsburgh game where half, yep, the team was on the COVID list and they brought up half of the practice squad. All those guys, that elevation was that one game they needed. So a lot of guys advanced a year for nothing, almost nothing, basically, I guess we'll say. So more recently they've signed guys that just like they did with Geno Stone last year, they re-signed him. He was going to be a restricted free agent. They just signed him to a different deal, and that turned out gangbusters for them. But that was just a 1 year deal. So, although I'm seeing a lot of talk about him being cut in Cincinnati after this year.
Yeah, that question has come up on Film Study Mailbag a little bit. He hasn't played very well, has had some of the same tackling problems without the same kind of ball production. But the question has come up is, you know, could he be a return to Baltimore and part of the split field role solution? On the back end, I think they really need a top rate free safety.
True.
And
yeah,
kind of is that in some sense. If you have another guy back there, he can do it. He's ideally a split field guy, but definitely has the ball hawk loose bracket skills, as I call them, plays for the overthrow very naturally, as opposed to Deshaun Elliott, had a big year, but plays for the middle of the body as soon as he sees it.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, so Washington would be, he'll at least get the restricted free agent tender. And whether they, you know, try to, this is the time of year, we're in December. It always seems like sometime in December, they pull a deal, you know, an extension out for somebody, as they're, you know, using up this year's cap money and getting that first pro, because you can get that first pro bonus proration in this year if you do it, before the end of it, before the, I guess it's the Wednesday, I think, before the last game. So, allows them to prorate, you know, use it this year. And then, if it ever becomes an issue with dead money, it's less dead money in the future.
Interesting. I did not know that. Okay. I know Broderick Washington was another one they signed to, you know, extended to a deal, and they ended up keeping the whole band together now for multiple seasons in terms of their five defensive linemen. The one last guy we hadn't mentioned yet is Hamilton. So, you know, a cheap 50-year option coming up at safety, I believe. Now last year seemed to be a big year for free agent safeties. They were all over the place. So maybe there will be an increase in that. Do you have any information on what the safety 50-year option would be?
Yeah, let me look it up. Over the Cap does a good job but although I'm not sure if they projected that far out.
If you say what it was this year, that's probably good enough.
Yeah, so they're projecting Linderbaum, because he's a lineman, and he's made one Pro Bowl, at $22 million. Hamilton would be at $15.5 million.
Okay, yeah, so that's not cheap.
No, it's not cheap. It is still one of the cheapest of the fifth year options. But Hamilton, both of them, because they made a Pro Bowl, they get a. The cheapest fifth year option for a safety is just over $9 million. But that's without playing time. The next up is playing time, which is 10.4, and then because he made a Pro Bowl, it's 15.25 mil. So, yeah. Okay. So that I think you're going to see one of them get re-signed this offseason.
I think so too. But I'm going to go out there and say I see the 15.5 number or hear the 15.5 number for Hamilton. If that holds up, I'm okay with that contract as a placeholder entering 2026. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that you'll play out the 25 on whatever first year deal he has, $4 or $5 million, whatever it is. And then in 26, he'd earn that amount. And then I am not at all comfortable committing to a fifth year option at $22 million for Linderbaum. I think that's too high. So I'd have to say decline that, which means I've got a lot of extra pressure this offseason to sign.
To get it done.
Yeah. You have the same plus spot?
Yeah. I mean, I think if push comes to shove, I think they'll use it. It's just a placeholder. I think they will use it with the idea that we're going to do everything we can to make sure that number does not happen.
Right. Now, the fifth-year option is guaranteed. Unlike a restricted free agent tender, they can Indian give on it and take it away and reduce
right. it. Right. And in fact, now the fourth and fifth year become guaranteed. Now, the fourth year is still going to be on the rookie deal, so it's not going to be that much. So, but now that with the most recent change to it, they added that it happens before the fourth season in May before the fourth season, it guarantees both of those years. But I cannot see them declining it if they. I know the number's high, but I just can't. It was a good faith gesture, whatever you want to call it. You want to get him re-signed. Hopefully it's done before then. But I would be shocked if they didn't exercise it one way or another. With the expectation that he's not going to play under it because they're going to get something done before then.
Right. Okay. Well, that certainly would give him some leverage that he'd probably appreciate having for the offseason. All right, let's move into the second group. That's a developmental group. And again, these guys are somewhere from a little short to they've hardly played at all yet in terms of getting, but they're still on the first contract and includes guys extending down to the practice squad. So it's anybody the Ravens currently have under any sort of contract, even injured, whatever it might be. The eight guys I have on the list are Jalen Armour-Davis, who'll be entering year four, Bo Braid, Adisa Isaac, Sanusi Kane, all rookies. And then David Ajabo, also entering year four. Trenton Simpson will be entering year three. Brandon Stevens, free agent, and TJ Tampa. So the big change I made was to demote Brandon Stevens from the young producer category where it was this year. He just hasn't had that kind of season again.
Yeah, and I mean, I think starting with him, you know, that was a guy that we kind of all expected that they might make an effort to re-sign last offseason. Whether they tried or not and couldn't get a number, or whether they wanted to see him do it again for another year, if it was that, if they were cautious that way, that turned out to be prudent. It'll be interesting to see what happens to him. He does have that versatility that they like in the secondary. Whether he would move inside, whether he could be a free safety, I'm not saying he can, but if he could be that guy, and coming off of a down year, if they kind of pounce on that and say, you know, we're gonna move you into the free safety spot. Because he's not going to get, you know, $14 million a year, like probably he anticipated, or more like he would have anticipated. I mean, if he had the same year this year he had last year, he's probably pushing above 14. Mm-hmm. But now you get him for 8 to 10, you know. You're still going to have to pay, and that might still be too much given that they've got some younger guys in the pipeline. But Humphrey's getting older, and he's only signed through 26, I believe. So you've got it now, you know, and I don't think he has the speed to be the free safety. Because obviously a lot of corners, you know, move to safety, you know, the Rod Woodson type, you know, scenarios, they move to safety. I mean, I think he's got the brains and, you know, all of that, the football IQ, so to speak, to do that. But back to Stevens, you know, I think that's going to be one of those interesting off-season decisions where, you know, we thought losing him. And obviously they now I'm not sure when they drafted Wiggins if that was to replace Stevens or was maybe to replace Humphrey. Obviously Humphrey's rebounded well this year, but based on last year, or whether they were just hedging their bet, whichever direction they ended up having to go. So I mean, I think bring him back, they can bring him back, but if they lose him, obviously based on this year, it's probably not going to be the end of the world either.
Right. They have to make some other very tough decisions how they spend their money this offseason with Ronnie Stanley up for a huge contract and some other. I mean, they don't have a big group of free agents. You made this point, I think, in the production meeting, or maybe it was on air, but it was in the production meeting, I thought, where Stanley is really the big decision. They have Patrick Ricard, they have Patrick McCary, they have Stevens, and there's one other I'm forgetting that's in the group
of the bigger names, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much it.
I'm not really considering Tre'Davious White in that.
No,
group,
and Urban's not.
No.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much. Yeah, I think that's kind of
Nelson Aguilar, Josh Jones.
None of them.
Big ones.
No.
Okay, so still a very, very large amount of money spent. Let's go through the Stevens thing first. We're going to order several possibilities for Stevens. One is that he has to play again on a 1-year prove it deal. We're not going to try and price it out yet there, or leaves for a multi-year deal, stays for a multi-year deal. And we're not going to try and price it. If he had those three or four as a possibility, including leaves for a 1-year deal. What kind of percentages would you allocate to each?
I think, I'm going to do it half and half. I think it's more than 50% he leaves.
Okay.
Whichever way that is, long-term, 1 year, 3 years, whatever it might be. I think it's probably more, if he does stay, I think it's more likely that it would be a 3-year deal than a 1-year. Now, obviously, it depends. If the market stinks for him, then it's a 1-year deal because he's going to want the 1-year deal. He wants to, whether it's safety, whether it's corner, he's going to want to get the playing time and show that this year was the fluke, not last year. So it depends. But if other teams are out there offering 3-year deals, decent 3-year deals, I guess we'll say. I think for the Ravens purposes, because they're going to be tight against the cap, unless they want to, go back into, they certainly did less of them this year, but if they want to go back into void years and things like that, the 1-year deals are harder for them to do because they are going to be tighter against the cap, depending upon what happens with Lamar. And we'll obviously get to that when we get to offense.
Right. So with a vet player. So with a player like Stevens, who appears headed for free agency, as you've just said, would they give him a support level deal just so he can start negotiations with another team and say, hey, look, Brandon, we can't give you a great contract coming out of this year. I think you understand it, but we'll offer you 3 years, $12 million total.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they do a lot. That's the starting point, whether that's the drop dead point, whether it's the one and the same, or whether it's, this is where we are right now. Go talk to other teams and come back to us and we'll see what we can do. We want you around. And apparently, I think all teams do this. I mean, we obviously focus on the Ravens and you hear about them being cheap and whatever that means. But a lot of teams offer perfunctory, we're making you an offer. We know you're not going to accept it, but at least we can say we made you an offer. And you can't say we just let you walk, and that could be a low ball, as we hear, the Ravens low ball, they're cheap, all this kind of stuff we've heard over the years, even though the numbers don't indicate that. But they're certainly coming from one source on the radio these days that still is pushing that line, even though they were in the top five and spending, not this season, but the three prior seasons, they were in the top five and cash spending.
That is an important consideration there, because we always talk cap and there's always complaints about how the Ravens don't have enough star players and they should have more because they should be leaning into it more. And yet the Ravens really do lean into it. They're up against the cap every single year. The problem the Ravens have is they draft so well. They're always put in into these difficult situations where you have to heartbreakingly lose players that, were raised here, so to speak, that had their initial years in the NFL here. And we don't have a lot of money to go out to the market and buy somebody else's players they're willing to give up.
Sure. And it, you know, they've made it clear if there's a guy they want to keep, they're generally going to keep him. I mean, I don't know what the percentage would be. 75% of the time, just as a number, I don't know. If there's a guy they really want to keep, they're going to keep him. Whether it's the Stanleys and the Humphreys, you know, Andrews, I mean, those guys all got top of the market deals, but somehow, and Lamar certainly got it. I know it took a while, but Lamar got a top of the market deal. They're not cheap. And like I said, the cash spending over those 3 years when they were being called cheap was still top five every year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they are going to, they obviously the specter of Lamar's contract and how difficult that, you know, that negotiation was, has to be in their brain of when it comes time to extend him, which they're going to need to do over the next couple of years. You know, how difficult is that going to be? If he wins another MVP, and I guess this year it's waning, but if he, you know, catches fire over the last 4 weeks here and somehow pulls the MVP off and they win a Super Bowl, I mean, he might be able to demand that fully guaranteed contract at that point. I don't think the Ravens are going to want to do it, but at that point he's going to have all of the, you know, all the leverage. And in the end, they can't tag him either. So when he gets right to that point, and that's obviously still years down the road, but it gets
they
to
do
that
have
point,
a little
that's
bit
the ultimate leverage, yeah.
Of buffer time with him.
Yes.
If he were to win the MVP this year, they could allow a cooling off period, so to speak, of year three and then still get the contract signed at that point. I certainly wouldn't want to go let him play 4 years on the current deal and then risk him playing his contract out. I would not want that. But
no. And you know, the biggest problem is that year, like I said, 2026, his cap number, I believe, is 74.5 million or something right like that.
Hard
Which, and we don't know. Yeah. 74.65. So that's 26. So they do have next year, at just 43.6 million. And they haven't, then they very clearly have not restructured in the last 2 years. Now, whether they're waiting to do that next year, which is only going to raise those 70, that 74 million the following year or the following 2 years. I kind of thought this year they will for sure. And they did take a step back cap wise this year. They weren't in the top five in cash spending this year for sure. But they needed to, because they'll probably have 11 draft picks this coming year, which is perfect timing for that, to get, you know, hopefully 11 guys. I know that could be all 11 are going to make it, but a bunch of guys in who are going to be on those cheap deals, replacing some of these guys, like perhaps like Stevens, that maybe they don't want to spend $10 million on a corner when they, you know, they're going to draft another couple next year to go along with the guys that, from this year. So, yeah, I mean, it's those tough choices you got to make, you know, and especially with those ever increasing quarterback contracts.
All right, let's talk through some of these and just have a bounce back on these. And that's a great overview of stuff. Talk about David Ajabo a second, who I think, you know, any kind of floor or ceiling on his expectations for his play is way down. Particularly telling that he's been inactive for a couple of weeks as a healthy scratch. Just got back into the lineup effectively, and he's ahead of Adisa Isaac apparently in terms of his pass rush snaps. But he's, because his special team snaps are zero, he really, really hurts the Ravens from that perspective. They'd rather have Isaac active. Very difficult kind of run with David Ajabo. I guess two things about this. Do you think the Ravens would ever go to take another player of this type where you know there's an injury and you know you're going to be effectively waiting a year on the basis of bringing back that first year? And do you think they'd ever do it without the NFI parachute that goes with it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the player. Obviously, they did it for him because he was considered but for the injury, he was a true first round talent, true top 15 talent, probably. So you take that chance in that case. I mean, later round picks, I mean, you sort of did the same thing with Voorhees, who was going to be, I guess, maybe a third round pick, I think, was probably where he was expected to land, but for the injury. And they ended up taking him in the sixth or seventh.
Seven,
yeah. Seven, was it seven?
Traded
okay.
A six, actually, to get
that's
seven.
Right. That's right. Right. So, That's a little different because your investment isn't so much. A second round pick hurts. And unfortunately, Ajabo was very raw too. So, you know, now we're obviously have seen that whether the injury is still, you know, has an effect or not, or whether it's just the rawness and, you know, losing that year plus basically because of being banged up so much in off season and, you know, not being able to do the things he otherwise would be able to do. I mean, you know, if it, I don't think they'd do a second again. Maybe I'll draw the line there. Maybe a third or fourth or later, as they did with Voorhees. The second hurts because, you know, that's a guy you would hope by year three is at least, if not sooner, is a starter for you. And I'm sure they thought that was going to be the case, but obviously it didn't turn out the way. And, you know, they had the Mike McDonald element there too, the Harbaugh connection there with him coming out of Michigan, whether that added into it, you know, whether it would be a player from another school that they didn't have a, you know, that kind of connection to, obviously that connection didn't really help them out in this case, but, you know, so I think they will do it again. I just don't think they would do it with as high of a pick. Perhaps.
And the other half of that question was, would they want the NFI to be there? Now, we had this conversation when Ajabo was drafted about how, you know, it's kind of drafting somebody in bad faith if you're planning to NFI them for the whole year. But I think you have that conversation with an injured player, and hopefully the Ravens can pull on some ways in which they're doing that player a favor, which I think they did with Voorhees some.
Yeah, I think it depends on the player because Ajabo was a first-round talent.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Voorhees was never going to be that. So I think that's probably where that comes into play. If it is a top 15 talent, you're probably going to, you know, it's probably going to be a situation where you're not going to NFI him, but whereas a, you know, third or fourth round talent like Voorhees, and I obviously going to depend on the extent of the injury too. You know, is it, you know, if it's a knee, that's one thing. If it's a hamstring, that's probably another, you know, something along those lines. I mean, and obviously the severity of the injury probably would play into all that as well.
And the NFI, it precludes him, as I understand it, it precludes him from practicing with the team. It doesn't preclude meetings. So you have that advantage additionally,
yes.
if you would like it. Right. And is there anything about lifting? Where does lifting go in that? He can lift on his own, I assume, at the facility as opposed to lifting at his home.
Yes. He can train and obviously rehab, but he can't actually step on the practice field per se between the white lines, I guess, so to speak. He can run off to the side, you know, but he can't step between the white lines. If obviously there's a lot of white lines out there, the several practice fields they have. But
yes. All right. So pick another player to talk about from this developmental group.
Yeah, I mean, the only one, and maybe it's probably more hope. I mean, obviously, you have the rookies. So, you know, they're all later round picks and an undrafted pick. So, I mean, obviously, you're going to that's where they kind of you would expect them to be. Fingers crossed this, you know, this is Trenton Simpson's, you know, bump year or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, he takes his knocks this year and comes out a much better player next year. So, you know, that he would be the only guy. I mean, I guess he's not he's close. I mean, he's one of those that's a little more I think he's probably the highest one on the line.
Yes, that's
closer
right.
Closer to a young producer. I mean, Armour Davis, unfortunately, we're back to injuries, just like with the Darius Washington. I mean, the guy's never been able to 3 years of, you know, he's been on IR at least at some point in all three of those years. Mm-hmm. And that was his, you know, that he fell in the draft because of that, too. That was his problems at Alabama as well. So while I'd like to see him, you know, turn that around, I'm not hopeful. And I mean, he's a guy that, you know, will probably you know, could be in that, you know, 45 to 65, you know, guys on the roster going at, you know, towards the end of the preseason. And will he make it to the 53, or will, you know, somebody push him down and off next year?
He'd be in a lot of jeopardy next year as a fourth year player. And that's I always say it's the easiest article to write the whole year. It's like, let's just list out the fourth year players for potential surprise cuts at the spring camp. And you mentioned they've got some guys in Braid and Kane who are safeties. Neither of those guys strikes me right now as a guy who's going to learn to play the back end on a split field basis. They're more like dime backs or even linebackers. And special teams players. That's what we saw out of them in the preseason in terms of what their skill set was. If that were to change, I'd be, by the way, thrilled to be wrong about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One guy I want to talk about in the last of this is TJ Tampa. And he's probably a underscores an important need of needing to stay healthy in your rookie year for the team to make your plans around him. Fourth year player, like Tez Walker on the offense, frankly, who's had some, you know, fragility concerns. Tampa's been in one or possibly even two games very briefly and played some special teams. Seems to be a guy who they have a, you know, they used him a fourth round pick on him at a corner. I mean, that's a serious amount of draft capital spent.
Yeah.
That it really would have been nice to see a little bit of what he could do this year.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think that, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you certainly have some hope for, you know, that you hope that this isn't that totally lost season, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, when if Armour Davis gets knocked, if they draft a rookie or two next year and Armour Davis gets knocked off the roster, then Tampa goes up a rung. If Stevens is gone, he goes up another rung, you know, things like that. So he very well could be in the mix. You know, he's pretty tall, isn't he? If I remember correctly,
I think he's 6 feet. Look it up right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a guy that definitely, would be somebody, you know, you'd want to see take that next step next year. And I mean, there was some talk of, and I, you know, you never know why guys fall in the draft. But there was some talk of him being, late second or third round pick, not a fourth. So
yes, and I wrong by the way, 6'2", 200. So he's a true aircraft carrier of the Ravens.
And that's
design.
Something they don't have. Yeah, that's something they don't have. So that would fit in with. I mean, I'm not saying he's ever going to be able to line up with Jamar Chase or a guy like that, but you know, the bigger receivers that are around, it'd be nice to have that kind of corner out there opposite Wiggins, or you know, as in the mix with the one of the top three, you know, and that way he can match up with those bigger guys.
I'll give you my top three in terms of hope of moving up to the young producer group in this in order. Trenton Simpson, I think, has the best chance just because of his current position in terms of playing time. My second would be Adisa Isaac, and my third would be Tampa. Mm-hmm. And I think the chances of JAD or Ajabo doing it are actually quite slim.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, well, let's move on. We'll talk about some veterans playing for market value. There's not usually a lot to talk about these guys other than, you know, when they're reaching free agency, but this group has a few nooks and crannies, a lot of vet men guys and some guys who are real values right now. I have nine in the group. I'll just list them out, and then you pick one you'd like to talk about. Chris Board, Malik Harrison, Marlon Humphrey, Namdi Madubuike, Michael Pierce, Roquan Smith, Brent Urban, Kyle Van Noy, and Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Board and Harrison are guys who are free agents. They've, you know, they just signed 1 year deals this year. Getting them back, if they want them for, you know, depth/special teams, that shouldn't be a problem. Urban, same thing. And actually, Urban was inactive for two games earlier this year, which was kind of unusual. And Tre'Davious White's an interesting one only because he obviously was very talented. He's coming back from injury, was terrible with the Rams, and actually played pretty well. But, you know, whether he can parlay his reputation into a bigger deal next year remains to be seen. And then obviously the other guys are just, you know, they're your veteran core on defense, you know, Humphrey, Madubuike, Pierce, Smith. I mean, obviously, Pierce would be the only one if they needed cap space, you know, he would probably be the most likely one to be at jeopardy
What's the savings on Pierce going into next
year? Yeah, I'm not positive on that, but I'm pretty
okay. Well,
sure.
While you look, yeah. I'm going
to
talk about.
And I'm not saying that's likely. I'm just saying if they did needed to go with any of them, if they wanted needed to go a different direction, that would be the one.
Okay, I think there is one of the big questions coming for me this year was whether or not Marlon Humphrey might end up being cut, and I thought that. The combination of Humphrey and Andrews, you're probably going to end up with one cut. Two star players, two very beloved players, but both getting older and the team, you need to fight it and always consistently get younger. But Humphrey's had too good a year for that. It's just at the point where
absolutely.
I think you extend him. You don't, I mean, certainly don't cut him for this next year, but I think you extend him and reduce his cap hit that way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. And actually, I forgot with Pierce, it's only about $600,000 in savings. And that's because of the prior deal had those void years.
Void years, sure.
So that's where those are catching up. So that's the big difference there. But so his cap number this year, so there's no reason to cut him, to be honest with you, because his cap number this year was $4 million. Next year, it's only $2.667 million.
And your $600,000, you would not be able to find anything close to that player. Not even a min player.
It's below the minimum. Yeah. So and he's only at $2.667 million. He's a bargain. Yeah.
Right.
So I take all that back.
Yeah, that's okay. We're among friends here. In terms of Marlon Humphrey, we'd agree though. Maybe an extension would be good. Where do you think he lands in terms of, what kind of contract do you have to give him to get him extended?
Well, he's not even 30 yet, is he? Or he will be 30? Is he 30? Just 30 this year?
He might be 29. I'll take a look.
Yeah,
let me look.
Yeah, let me look at that too.
Actually, he was drafted young. Yeah, he's 28, and he was 29 in July.
So yeah,
it's gonna cost you a while.
Yeah, so he'll be 29 next season. It's a tough value there. He's obviously not going to get $20 million like or 19 what he got this time. Could he get 14? Probably. If he continues to have the season he's having and stays healthy, and that's obviously. I mean, I think that's the number one thing. I mean, the last year was a down year, but I think I personally at least attribute a lot of that to health. He just was banged up the whole year, and with a banged up corner is asking for trouble, So. So I could see him in the 14 range. That would still be helpful because, his cash next year is $18 million. The following year, 18 or 19.25. So you'd kind of like to avoid those big cash numbers that way. Tacking on, there's already a void year there for 2027. So if you tacked on, two extra years beyond that, that would get him to be, 33 at the end. And again, there's a question of what they envision him. Do they envision him being able to continue as a boundary?
Isn't that the real question? I mean, this contract to me would be the time to sit down with Humphrey and say, hey, we envision you moving to safety during this contract. And I hope that works for you.
Right.
But the Ravens also clearly have had a need there. You've been one of the best ball hawks coming off your own man to make plays, which is exactly the characteristic you want out of a safety.
Sure.
And I think at safety also, the speed aspect is often overplayed. I think it's more about instincts. We've seen Kyle Hamilton, who's actually a slower safety, being effective there because of his instincts. I think Humphrey'd be great there. As a free safety, I think he'd be terrific.
Well, so that may be, and then you're looking, the 14 mil range would probably be about right for older safety because, safeties can play into their mid-30s or early to mid-30s as opposed to corners where they start falling off the cliff at 31 or something like that.
You mentioned a two-year extension, which only have him for 3 years. Once you're talking about taking a reduced amount like that and taking him to into his
well, that would 30s. Do that would be four. Well, it depends on when it happens. But if it would happen before, if it happens this offseason, that would be 4 years. So he's still got 25 and 26.
Oh, I didn't really say 26 on his contract. Informed here.
Yeah, okay. So that's when it's 19. His cash is 19.25 mil. So that's where he's not seeing that. he's not. Unfortunately, he's either extended or he's gone. He's not going to see that 19 million. He may not even see 18 next year. They might want to work on something this offseason with him. And as you said, it's just a question of where they envision him. And he seems like a guy who loves Baltimore. I mean, obviously, money talks. You know, we get sometimes we get too much, and as fans get too much, and oh, this guy loves it here. He's never going to go somewhere. But then the money says something. You know, the Ravens say this number, and somebody else says that number, and okay, I'm out.
I think you can get a player to take a $1 million discount on a $14 million contract, maybe. But I don't think you can get him to take a $3 million discount on a $14 million contract.
Well, it's just a matter of spreading it out. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's first of all, that's good news. That would be 4 years of Humphrey at something like 4 years for 55, 60 million in that range.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they'd be doing that. Sign me up for that right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Chris Board. This interesting thing going on with Trenton Simpson that he now seems to be a guy they're alternating series with, which, by the way, is a very big difference. You may have heard it on the show before, but if you alternate by what like specific characteristics, then usually it's by down and distance alteration. The Ravens had tons of that over the years in terms of having different people come in to play Will on third down, on passing downs. And even at one point, Ellerbe and McLean, there was this kind of bogus second down division where Ellerbe was just a little bit better coverage guy and he was almost a run defender. And so he was a second and long guy you would bring in. But this, in the case of Board, it's been a series by series, complete series change. That's straight up competition for that position.
Yeah. And I mean, Board has not gotten a lot over the years. It's not really, I mean, so obviously it was a special teams ace and every, you know, mop up time one, you know, one way or another, hopefully because we're kicking ass, not getting our ass kicked. But, but yeah, so to see him, you know, he's on a 1 year deal. So that'll be interesting to see. Again, he's not going to break the bank, but he does qualify for that enhanced 1 year deal. Cause he's that 4 year, the last CBA, it's that 4 year. I can't remember the exact name, but it's basically, if you've been with the team for 4 years, you can get an extra $1 million basically.
And Harrison has that this year.
So that's an advantage to the Ravens because they can give him that, but he counts basically $1 million less on their cap. Other teams would not be able to do that. They'd have to give him $2.5 million, for instance, whereas the Ravens are giving him $2.5 million, but only $1.5 million is counting on the cap.
That's a great market friction and very well explained there. Can the Ravens are only allowed to have one such player though, correct?
I think it's two.
Oh,
I think it's
man.
Two.
They got
to. I think it's two, but they
that.
Have to be. They have to been with the Ravens for 4 years. So we'd have to look at the list of guys.
Yeah. So like, Brent Urban would qualify for that kind of thing if they wanted to.
Well, he's making even less. So you know he's making the veteran minimum. So you don't need to. They probably don't need to do that with him. Okay. And has he been back 4 years now?
He hasn't been back for four, but neither is Board.
No. Board. Well, he's got to be four consecutive. It's Harrison, not Board. My apologies. It's okay. Harrison has that. Board does okay. not.
So yeah, I guess we'd be looking at the guys who are just graduating out of the class. So maybe somebody like Tylan Wallace would be a good bet for that.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's very informative stuff. And I did not realize that they were allowed to have two such players. That's fantastic. Maybe we talk about Roquan Smith's deal a little bit here, because obviously a guy who's had a little bit of a down year this year, I think we'd say there was some inconsistency in his play in Chicago. He'd been great for a year and a half here in Baltimore before this year. Looks like to me he might be carrying a little bit of extra weight, but in terms of Roquan, is there anything they can really do about his contract for the next couple of years?
No, I mean, he still has 3 years left. They just restructured the deal, the simple restructure this past offseason, which makes the dead money larger for each of the in the future. So right now, his cap number for next year is almost $24 million. The dead money is $41
plus. Ooh.
So, yeah, he's not going anywhere. The following year, if it continues, and assuming they don't restructure him, it's still $17 million in dead money, but would be a little over 11 in savings. And that's, you don't like the 17, but the 11 in savings, if you had to do something, they could do it then. Obviously leaving out post-June 1 releases, but even with, there's no post-June 1 release for next year that wouldn't make sense either. But the following year, if he has an up and down year again in 25, then that 26 could be an interesting decision for them.
All right. All right. It's well done. In terms of the Michael Pierce thing, I think the Ravens really need him. It's one of the things I'm really looking forward to after the bye is him coming back and being that extra big man on the inside that has been so valuable for the Ravens these last couple of years. Michael Pierce, I mean, we're talking about just a little bit over 1 year ago today, was a guy they paired up with Matapike on third down to try and have him on the field.
Yeah.
This Ravens team has dipped into their interior defensive lineman to play more snaps this year in particular, keeping two on the field and not going to these rush or race car packages where they have three outside linebackers or four outside linebackers on the field. So Pierce takes on an importance for me that I was very excited by that signing. Let's put it that
yes,
way.
Yes.
All right. Kyle Van Noy, is he signed for one more year or is he signed only for this year?
He signed for one more. So, and it's relatively reasonable. Obviously he got off to that really hot start. He's obviously cooled off, which you'd almost have to, cause he got off to that. I mean, what do you have, six sacks after four games or something like that?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard not to slow down from that, but I don't envision him being, I mean, his cap number next year is 5.4 million, just under 5.4. So for a solid veteran rush, and obviously at this point, even if they draft an edge in the first round, you know, they're going to be, you know, at least in the 20s drafting. So you can't expect that guy to come in and be an all pro, or not that Van Noy's an all pro, but so I don't envision that being an issue there.
Right. All right. And Tre'Davious White, if you had to guess, what kind of value might he draw on the open market?
Sorry, I was trying to mute this.
And I do appreciate that, by the way. All right. We're looking at Tre'Davious White here for a moment, what he might draw.
Yeah. If he plays I think he's the guy that's going to have to play next year on a one-year deal with a lot of incentives to try and really rebuild his, you know, I mean, playing part-time with the Ravens over half of a season. Even if he plays well, I'm not sure that's going to be enough to rebuild. So he's a guy that probably would probably be somebody who might get a, you know, $4 or $5 million deal with chance to make $5 million in incentives, you know, something like that. So he could get up to 10 or something like that. I don't know that happens here, but he probably is a guy that, you know, may not be signed until after the draft or right around the draft as teams figure out what the draft is going to look like for them. And, you know, what after free agents, he's certainly not a first wave of free agent or even second wave of free agent guy.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And that's, you bring up a good point. There are a lot of teams are still trying to find their own way. And it's a period of real uncertainty for players who are sitting on a bubble waiting for a deal to come in that may not from their current team. I would love if they had him as a 3 with $5 million of incentives kind of guy. I don't know that I'd really want to go any higher than that. And that may price him out of Baltimore if that were the case. I honestly don't think he's played so well in his games in Baltimore, and this could change, obviously, that he's earned $5 million yet.
Right. No, and that's probably true. I'm just thinking if he continues, shows he's healthy, and obviously shows he's far better than he was with the Rams, which from that standpoint, it's even average play here is 100% better than what he was doing for the Rams. So
it was truly awful, and that's the reason the Ravens got him. Honestly, frankly, they got him because had played so poorly.
Yeah, and I mean he removed his playing time incentives. Totally.
I did not know that.
Yes, he removed. He does have per game roster bonuses, which is about 58 a game. Which is obviously not that big of a deal, but he had whether it was snaps and interceptions and things like a lot of those he probably wouldn't reach anyway because he, you know, sat on the shelf for a while with the Rams. So if it was five interceptions, he's unlikely to get five interceptions in, you know, half the season here. But he did willingly remove those from his deal to facilitate the trade.
Okay, well that is. That's good to hear, and obviously not probably a lot of money. One of the things about the NLTBE bonuses that he could earn next year, if we're talking about having $5 million of those And I assume they'd all be in LTBE, right? There wouldn't be a
I would assume they would structure them that way, especially again since he's kind of sat for half a year.
So those wouldn't even be paid until the 26 cap. Now, you don't want to burden your cap. The Ravens, they've always got a lot of ways that they can create money or push money into future years. That's usually not the issue on a lot of things. Usually the issue is they want to burden the future caps by that much. I mean, those dollars mean something too. And I get that so often in terms of this is like, what are you talking about? His cap cost this year is only $2 million or whatever. Well, no, but that's because they took these void years.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's the Piper will come later, yes.
Yeah, the Beckham effect.
Okay. Yes.
All right, let's move on. Talk about the veteran cap value concerns, because there are three of those as I see it on the defense. Arthur Maulet, Broderick Washington, and Marcus Williams. Now, this kind of ascending order of value that's still sitting there. But Arthur Maulet, $2.25 million in cap savings next year if they cut him.
It's going to depend on what direction they want to go, what they feel, if this year's injuries are something that's going to hinder him next year. He played really well last year. If they expect him to return to that 2.5 and expect him to be the slot corner. So obviously there's two ifs there right off the bat, but that is, that's his cap number is $2.5 million. That's cheap for that role. So then it's just a question of, does he fit?
It's hard for them to go out and find another guy at that price, but they may have already decided they have all the options they need on the roster right now. Because they've been playing Humphrey in the slot a lot to get Wiggins and Stevens on the outside. And that might happen again with a different right cornerback this next year. And it also, Hamilton, if he comes back down and plays big nickel, is a high percentage of total slot snaps taken. So your need for a player like that might revert to kind of a vet min guy. I'm also concerned that Maulet being a year on the shelf removed from when he was a decent player at his age is a risk as well. So,
yeah. And I mean, cause he is 31 now. So yeah, that's a concern there. And it's a situation where they can let that play out. And then, if they do draft a corner in the first or second round, because that's the way the board falls, then they make a move after that, or they go to him and say, we still want you around, but we need you to, his salary is $2.25 million. So, we'll give you a haircut of, $1 million, but we'll give you a chance to earn it back if you reach 65% of the snaps or something like that.
Okay.
Where it's not going to hurt their future cap if that plays out that way, because if they needed him, it worked out. But they could, if you get him for, $1.5 million as opposed to $2.5 million, that probably is hard to turn down. But that's something that, as we said, is going to depend on what their plans are. Are they getting a free safety? So Hamilton goes back to his old role, and obviously, do they draft what they draft as far as corners next year?
Yeah, well, the Ravens are very good, and this is something that teams have to do. You definitely need to draft your outside corners. Those guys they're hard to come by, the guys with the length and size to play that position. But the slot corner role, you need quality there, and it can be expensive to go out and get somebody, but expensive there might mean $3 million a lot of the time, might mean $2 million, depending on what year you're talking about, but it doesn't usually mean $10 million.
Right.
And when the Ravens have paid that for like Tavon Young and whatnot on his second deal, there are questions that come with that kind of the call. Because outside corner, it's like starting pitchers and relievers. If you just think you can improve your cornerback level of play by acquiring a whole bunch of slot corners, it's like acquiring a bunch of relievers without and neglecting your starting rotation.
Right, for sure.
All right, Broderick Washington signed a deal. There's not much of a cap savings this next year. So if he were to be cut, I think it would be because he's cut. It's about $900,000. So basically, you're replacing him one for one with a rookie.
Right.
Almost. And it would probably be a case of he's cut for a player who just outplayed him in camp.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's 4.6 mil. So again, it's not a huge number there. And as you said, the savings is only the $900,000. So you're still holding on to a decent amount of it's a wash one way or another, whether it's him or it's a young player, other than it's if they do end up again, board falls the way it falls. And in the fourth round, they get and they probably could use a little bit more youth there, or if it is a guy that they feel has a, higher upside for pushing the pocket again, things like that. Then, yeah, but I would agree. I think he's most likely on the team. But if he is outplayed because he's out of weight, you know, comes in out of shape or something like that, they won't hesitate.
Yeah, he could be out of a job. And I want to point out one additional thing there, because each player, if they drafted a rookie, even if it's or undrafted guy, even that they maybe like a little better than Broderick Washington because they think he's better and they have Broderick Washington, it's still a big difference in option value, because mm-hmm. Broderick Washington has one more year he's signed
Correct.
For, and it's for a pretty high number. So it might not that they might not view that option as having a lot of value. But the rookie, that guy always has three Absolutely. Additional years. So
Exactly. Yeah, again, with 11 picks, there's probably a pretty good chance they're going to draft an interior guy. Whether it's I don't know if it'd be certainly not the first round, most likely, but mm-hmm. you know, even if it's a later round pick, that would be a guy that obviously they value, and you know that they rarely cut, even you know maybe a seventh round pick here and there they'll cut, but they really do try to keep for a lot of the reasons you just said, that you know, especially with the quarterback contract they have now. With Lamar's deal, that's the guy you're going to need that cheap labor for sure.
And Marcus Williams, I guess the question for me is there any chance that he plays more meaningful time in Baltimore?
Zero. I mean, the only way is if everybody gets hurt this year and they're forced to play him again. But after this year, I think it's, you know, it's not a huge cap savings, which you would like, but it also is $12 million in cash. And here we get to that cash versus cap issue. They're not going to pay him. And it clearly it seems like they've given up on him. I mean, they've given him every try, you know, that they feel they can give him. So, you know, it's not a pretty situation, but I think the barring everybody getting hurt and him being forced to play again and somehow looking like the guy they expected him to look in the last couple weeks of the season or the playoffs, I don't think there's any chance. You know, it's a little over $5 million in savings, which isn't great because it's there's still $13 million in dead money. But you're not paying him $12 million in cash.
Do you concern yourself with dead money at all? Honestly, when you look at that,
it's a sunk cost. Yeah, I mean, it's a sunk cost at this point. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're paying more in dead money than he would count if he's here, which we'll get to in the next segment with Tucker, you know, that's a different story. But when there is savings and, you know, maybe there's only $1 million in savings, but again, that's where you go back and what are the numbers? $12 million in cash to pay for his salary. There's no way they're paying that.
Right.
You know, there's just absolutely no way. And they could go to him and say, we want a pay cut and we'll keep you around. But my guess is he's, you know, this has been a disaster for him too. My guess is he's going to want to find somewhere else, even if it's on a veteran minimum deal, just to start over again.
And that's what it will be at this point. For him,
I think so, yeah.
We'd agree. So, we'll go into the last category, which is a transitional category. There are 11 guys on there. And maybe I'll just read off the names I have in here, but give me three guys you think would potentially ascend to be a young producer maybe at some point in the future. And obviously that's a big leap for somebody like this, or maybe even just contribute in some way. But the 11 guys are Malik Ham, Anthony Kendall. Some of these guys you forget are even on the team. Desmond King, recent signee to the practice squad, but hasn't been brought up yet. William, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Kwenku.
Sounds about right.
Christian Matthew. Trayvon Mullen, yes, he's still around. Adelier, CJ Ravenel, Josh Tupou, Christian Welch, and Chris Wormley.
Yeah, I mean, the only one, I mean, Welch has obviously got some value, special teams, you know, fill in here and there, if you know, so, and he's obviously a veteran minimum kind of guy. He did leave, obviously, last year, but he came back this year, so he's a guy I would think they'll be re-signed in the spring, whether he makes the team or not, or whether he's on the practice squad starting next year. Tupou, same thing. I mean, he's been elevated three times now when they've needed some, you know, some depth on the interior. So he's a guy I could see, but they're probably their, you know, 53rd guy or practice squad. You know, I don't even think Tupou would actually be 53. He's more of a practice squad guy. Malik Ham is the only other one because he's shown some in the preseason. But again, here we go. He's been injured 2 years in a row now. So, you know, or is he just another one of those guys that's just snake bit you know, like Ajabo or Armour Davis, or thankfully we saw at least with Ardarius this year, kind of step out of that so far, knock on wood. So, but the other guys, yeah, I mean, they're just, they're guys, they're Jags, as Billick would say. Mm-hmm.
It's Ham was a guy who had some shown some Sam linebacker chops, which would be, they would really love to have that on the team again. They don't really have anyone who fits that role. They're playing Harrison kind of in that role, and he's not really a good coverage guy.
Right.
Van Noy had played a ton of off ball snaps in his career, and he's not an ideal coverage guy either at this point. So
no.
It would be really nice if they could do that. It's funny because Owe has all the traits for it. He has, you know, speed and, mm-hmm. and what you want at that position. He's just, that's not his position. He's a rush linebacker.
Yeah, so. Sure.
All right. Always fun to have this show with you, Brian. Just, I can't thank you enough for coming on, but what where can folks read your stuff regularly and contact you directly on Twitter?
Sure. So at Raven Salary Cap on Twitter with the two S's. I know a lot of people mess that up. I do sometimes when I type it, I'm like, oh, what's your, I got to add that. The SS just doesn't feel right when you're typing it, but at Raven Salary Cap on X, I guess I'll start finally saying that. And then Russell Street Report for articles. And obviously once the season ends, that's where we'll have our, you know, put together the big, preview of the following year, immediately put something out. And hopefully that's not for, you know, well into February before we have to do that.
Yeah,
but that's the preview and then the initial preview and then the big preview as things start happening. Comes along right before the beginning of the new league year, which is going to be about March 15th, I think, this coming year.
Later than normal. That's
it's right in that range. Usually in that range. Okay. Obviously, depends on the you know, the way the calendar falls. So it's, I think it's the second or third Wednesday. It's the second Wednesday.
The you must have already kind of got your skeleton put together for the season ending article, because it literally comes out the day after the Ravens lose their final game.
Yeah, I will be working on that. You know, last year it was easy because we had the first round bye, so I didn't have anything else to think about, put it together. I don't know that we'll have that this year, obviously, but highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. The more I think about it, because there's only one. So I'll at some point get working on that, because, yeah, I put that first one out. Just to, you know, it's a list of free agents, list of you know, where they are cap wise, and obviously there's going to be all kinds of adjustments between then and early March when the full article comes out.
All right, take a look for the offense show if you haven't seen that already. We'll have a lot of information about Justin Tucker, a lot of discussion about some of the young producers on that side of the ball, about Rashad Bateman, and of course the Deontay Johnson situation. We'll be covering all that. Brian, thanks again for coming on.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.